In this recording, we hear from Jeanette Gill. She started volunteering with the new library at Cedar Mill in 1975. Soon she became the main library storyteller for the next 10 years and got involved with fundraising, the board, and many other aspects of the library, including board president. As part of the grant to document and explore the founding of the Cedar Mill Community Library over 35 years ago, this is another in one of the recorded conversations we have had with the library's founders. So sit back and enjoy.
Could you tell us your name and a little bit about your family and how long you've lived in Cedar Mill and what initially brought you to the area?
Okay. My name is Jeanette Gill. I was born Unis, which is a Dutch name, and I was born and raised in Curaçao, Netherlands Antilles. There's no university on the island, so you have to go outside of the island to go to university. And that's where I met my husband. He had family in Oregon, and he came originally from Wisconsin, and he took me back there to meet his parents during winter. And I still remember just shaking him when we got inside and saying, "Don't ever make me live here. Don't ever make me live here." So we decided on Oregon as a good compromise. His brother and his sister had both commuted out here. And we lived first downtown after we got married in 1974. And we're looking for a place to live. And we found this lovely, lovely, small house on 3/4 acre for a reasonable amount. And we found out later that it was originally a fruit farm. It still had some of the 80-year-old cherry trees on there and stuff. And the house was only like maybe 600 square feet. It was tiny. And I got, I had my first child in 1976. So when I was pregnant with them and we had just bought the house, I said, I don't know anything about kids' books. I better find out. And I found out that the library had just started and they were hunting for storytellers. And I said, well, that's a good way to get to know children's books, and then at least I'll be ready when my child's born. And so I started volunteering probably in late 75 or early 76. And they had at that time a little, small cadre of storytellers, and within a year or two, they started sending me to master classes in storytelling down at Portland State University. They couldn't pay me, but they could pay for my classes as part of their budget. And so they paid for those classes, and then I became their main storyteller for probably the next 10 years. So eventually I got to the point where people outside of the libraries were asking me to storytell all the time. And so I became a business of mine, and I did it for Beaverton School District and the zoo and churches and, you know, all around. And I usually charged $100 an hour, and I did presentations on how you can incorporate songs, poetry, crafts with your storytelling. When I would do storytelling here, eventually, in the community room, we'd get 200-300 people sometimes. I still have kids come up to me and say, "I remember when I came here and you told stories." So was a good fortuitous for me and fortuitous, I guess, for the library. At that time, it was totally run volunteer. And I would say they had just come from their van and bought the little place down there that Bales had given them, because Bales was where Walgreens was now. And I still remember storytelling in there. And then within 6 months, they had moved to next to, this was like a variety store down below, and where the second edition now was the library, and I helped them move there. And then I was all involved in the fundraising and stuff too. So I helped make that quilt, that's the author's quilt. I have a picture of me doing that. I helped with the messes to make funds. I was very, very good friends with Mary Packer, and I still am after all these years. I probably was the youngest of that group, mm-hmm. because I was still, you know, Mary Packer, Sue Peterson, Jan Johnson, and Fran Harkins, and me. And we were very, very busy with the library at that time. I'm sure you have Mary already on your list. So
yeah. So can you tell me a little bit about Cedar Mill, the area?
Cedar Mill, oh, it was so much fun. Yeah, so the house we bought was called Busonic Heights. and it was an old farmhouse. And we found out that our basement was actually a dirt basement. And so when my husband finally dug a hole down into it to see what it was like down there, we found an old iron bedstead that I still have. And, you know, it was all iron and everything. And then, like I said, we did find out that our trees were 80 to 100 years old. And so we had Black Lamberts and Royal Queen Anne's, the Queen Anne's. And I used to sell the cherries for 35 cents a thing. And I couldn't let the people come pick. I'd have to go pick because the trees were so big. I was afraid somebody would get hurt, you know. And then we had plums and, you know, the old-fashioned plums that were golden plums. And you never, you know. And then the property just to the back of us was the horse training field where everybody walked their horses, because at that time we were still considered rural, so you could have chickens and horses, and that was where everybody who had a horse would bring him to do him the circular track, and my kids would lean out over the back and watch him. The house, my husband, when I became pregnant with my second child, the house that he said, well, you need a bigger house. So we connected it to the old house and built a double story with a basement, and then it connected to the old house. And it's still there.
So a lot more open space, sounds like.
Yeah, it's still, you know, they cut through, they are threatened first to cut, you know, that Cedar Hills extension was going to come down 112th, and we were part of the group that fought against that because we said the grading, you know, it basically went down like this and like that, and it's not going to work, and you're not going to want to do a big street here. So instead they cut the back. So they took away all those old trees, I gather, you know, because from what it looks like, they took about a third of the backyard.
Yeah. Was Sunset High School here at that time?
Sunset High School. Both my kids were graduates from Sunset High School. When my kids were going to school, I became PTC president for Cedar Mill School, and they did not have a kindergarten. There was no public kindergarten, and the schools were going through first through sixth grade, but now they've eliminated that and put the sixth with middle school.
So it sounds like you came in and got involved with the library after things were already rolling a little bit?
Just rolling a little bit. Okay. They were just starting to form their children's groups. I think our first storytelling kids amount were about 8 or 9 kids. And by the time I was reading regularly, it was probably 50 to 75 on a regular basis, yeah.
How many story times a week were you doing?
I usually averaged at least 1 a week, sometimes 2 a week. Okay. And then I think the third year, I was looking in my book, and I think in 1977 is when I did all of summer reading program for them. And I went to the WCCLS and said, okay, how do you run this? And then I came back and I ran our own program for us. And then on our 10th anniversary, I was the one who got Eric Kimmel involved in coming out, and I think there's still some pictures of him in there because I'd taken classes from him and everything down at Portland State. Yeah.
And so were the story times for all ages? Or?
All ages. We often divvied them up into preschool and elementary school and above. Okay. And as my kids got older, I just grew along with them as far as what they were exposed to, etc. I also got on the board.
So tell me about that. When did you get involved with the board?
Well, always, you know, because I knew Mary and I knew Sue and I, you know. And also, did you know about the pathway system? So about probably the same time, about the same group of people. So Sue Peterson's husband at the time said, you know, our school is here, our library's here, but there's no way to connect them because there's no sidewalks. At that time, there were just no sidewalks in Cedar Mill. We were very rural, even along Cornell, which was very dangerous. So we said, why don't we make a Cedar Mill pathway systems? And we created our own nonprofit, and Ray Lotking was involved. The Lotkings were. I was the treasurer. Sue Peterson's husband. later on she became Conger, but her first husband, he was on that board and she was on this board, and I was worried about the traffic. So we did that, and that's how that little bridge that overlooks the waterfall got created. And we, at that time, made $40,000.
Wow.
And we paved the pathway from Saltzman all the way up to the county line. And you'll still see bits of it. If you're heading past the school, you'll see a curb and asphalt on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
That's all us still.
Huh.
And the county always said they would take over, but they never did. You know, take care over maintenance of it. And so for years, because I was treasurer, I would still get work crews to come and clean it and then pay the county, you know, to go clean it. And then finally, I just said, I'm giving up on this.
Yeah.
And then as development has come, they've put in sidewalks. But if they're still just asphalt with a curve, that's still the Cedar Mill pathway system, and the bridge is still from that.
Wow.
And Sue Peterson's husband is the one who designed the bridge.
That's great.
Yeah. So that, oh, anyway, so go back to this board. So they all, you know, they all knew me from that. And so I got involved in the publicity for the board. So for 3 years, I did publicity, and then I became vice president, and then I became president in 1983. I think I was on the board for 7 to 9 years, and then off of it for 2 years, and my husband came home. And he was the one who hired Peter Leonard. And I was on the board that hired the Schweitzers. And did the interviewing and stuff for that.
So when you were involved in the early years, did you have any idea of kind of the magnitude of what you were setting up?
Did you
see where it was going early on?
I think we saw where it was going. Our board was a very, very creative board. We had very little money, but all the money we made was basically to pay at that time the librarian. Then eventually we hired a children's librarian part-time. It was not even a full-time job. And then we had an interim one. I know we couldn't afford very good yet, our salaries, and we had no benefits and stuff. And until we joined WCCLS, you know, that became, I think that was during my husband's time that we finally did that. The people who started this were extremely creative people, I think. You know, I have they had a vision. I still see them on a regular basis, almost all of them. Mary Packer, very organized, you know, and they had the commitment to do it. So, like, once you became the storyteller, you were here every week. I mean, there was no doubt about it. You couldn't say, oh, this is just a volunteer job. It was your job, you know, and you made sure it ran.
So you mentioned WCCLS. So it was forming about the same time as the library.
But it sounds like our
involvement was...
Was much later. Yeah, so I ran the children's program. And then I was also the feature thing for... So Washington County's Children and Young Adults. And we went ahead and I taught how to do crafts that related to children's stories for all of the librarians. So we must have had mutual contact. And then I also have a letter in here about how Mary and Ernest all went to a meeting that was for all the libraries, and it was held up at the hotel there on the Columbia River.
Hmm.
And this is all about the pathway system. So that was about the same time, and that's Ray Lochting. And then Gary Peterson was the project coordinator for that. Ray Lochting was publicity. So this was in 77 and summer program announced, and that's the summer program I did with the library. And then we did several, you know, we tried to do a lot of programs that, you know, would create interest. So we do classes and stuff. And then we also, when we moved out of that to the building, not when this became double story, but when it was single story, we had the community room, and we, all of the same ladies who did the quilts, and they also did the house quilt that all got auctioned off, but we finally decided the author quilt wouldn't get auctioned off. So I think it's still in the hallway here, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I still have, which was up in the, and Mary and Ernest saved them for me. We each made children book characters of quilting. And so I remember I made Cat in the Hat. And so they're all still in blocks that everybody made. And we had them framed in cloth, but the cloth finally faded. And then new librarians came in and they just said, oh, not interested. And so they were all up in the attic here. And Marion said, Jeanette, don't you want those? So I still have all those at home. And I took all the faded stuff out. And I keep saying, I'm going to make a quilt and donate it back. But I never have time. So one of these days, maybe you guys will get another quilt out of it. But I remember doing green wreath classes and weaving classes here and sewing classes here. And then, you know, Volunteers Power Library. So this is...
It sounds like some of those classes were for adults.
Adults, just to get them interested into coming. Okay. Because what we're really trying to do is expand usage. And so the only way we could expand usage is if we could get people in. And, you know, some people are just not interested in just books. And so that was one way we could do it.
Do you know anything about the forming of the nonprofit status and how that came about?
You know, I'm almost certain that it was Walkers. The Walkers and, because it was Pat Walker. And Buzz. And Buzz was quite connected in the community, and he's the one who said, no, we need to do it. And so they formed a nonprofit to get into that and contacted Bales to see if he would donate it. And Otis was a consummate supporter of the library, always willing. He let us have that mess in front of his store every year for years and years and years until Mary said, no, this is not, because I would have been the next chairman. And I said, no. Not me, because Sue had done it, and everybody had done it who had been on the board, and I said, oh, I'm not doing that. And so Mary is the one who came up with the idea of making the second, you know, the second edition, because she had gone to other non-for-profits and said, how do you continually raise money? So, but by that time, we had already joined the WCCLS, and we had more stable funding. And now it all depends on circulation. But at that time, we were just trying to increase our circulation to prove that we were a viable organization.
What was the relationship with other libraries in the area, like Beaverton, Hillsborough, at the time?
We had very little to do with them.
Okay.
Very little. Like I said, we did occasionally would meet once a year with them to, you know, I think after I had done the summer reading program, after that, we did hire a part-time children's librarian, and they went to the meetings, and then they got to, if all the libraries got together and formed a summer reading program. So they had a theme that was all matching, not each individual library having one, and then they shared resources. So if they had an actor or an author or anything, then they would travel from week to each of the libraries, and that was part of the forming of WCCLS too, I think.
Knowing that there were tons of obstacles, what were the one or two main obstacles that you remember in the early years?
Oh, money. You know, we had so little money that we had to sell that quilt, you know, and afterwards I thought, oh, we should never have done that, you know? I mean, it was so much work to do, because they did it on all the historic houses in Cedar Mill. They based it on, and it just got won by somebody, you know? And afterwards we thought, what a shame, you know? But we had to, I mean, that was one of our few ways to make money. And so, you know, so here's me at Mass. And so, see, here we made $10,000 in the past 2 years is the major fundraiser for the Cedar Mill, and we're hoping to make $11,000, and that was in 1983. So you sold, and that bought all our books, everything. That's what paid for that.
You know, other than raising the money, how did you gather materials for the library when early on?
And early on, they asked for donations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you remember what the hours were?
You know, I don't. All I remember is coming in the morning and reading. So, and that's when they were in that building. So it must have only been like 10 to 4. Is my guess, because and they try to do it on the weekends, but I'm not sure if they were always.
So now when, you know, 36 years later, when you look at the library, what are your feelings and thoughts about it? And
there.
Oh, there's the quilt.
There's the quilt. There's me. There's Mary and Ernest. Margaret Stark, I met. Pepper McGranahan. I wonder if she's still around. I'm sorry. Lois Jenkins. Yeah, so that's the quilt.
Is there a record of who won that quilt?
Now, I suppose? This is the one that's here.
Oh, okay.
You know who... Oh, Sue Peterson is the one who knew who had won it. And now she's gone. So maybe Mary would know?
It would be amazing to...
Yeah, to see who... That. Because... You know, but it had all, the, it was like this, but had all the old buildings on there. And so this is our 10th year anniversary, and Eric Kimmel came. And he's written now 10, 15 children's books. And here he is, you know, on our 10th anniversary. 200 volunteers worked at readying the sale, which will try to top the 19,500 raised. So from 80, what did was the last one was like 83, this is 86. So every year we got a little bit more, you know. The first mess sale 10 years ago raised $1,000 for the library. Mm-hmm. So that's how we made our first $1,000, really. Yeah. You know, that was actually, and then like I said, we did it with quilts. And
and you remember the year that second edition started, or?
That's much later, because second edition didn't start until I was off the board and my husband was off the board. So, like I said, Mary would know that for sure, because okay. She's the one who, with Fran, ran and figured out how different ones of them were run, and they wanted a more permanent funding mm-hmm. at that time. But to tell the truth, once we got into WCCLS, our funding problems, to a good degree, were much less imminent, you know.
Okay.
But I will say, one thing, 1983, when I took over as president, I still remember this, so you could ask Mary, but we had somebody on the board who would talk to the press and say things that the library wasn't, the board wasn't happy with. And so the I was vice president, and the president before me just up and quit. And the lady, we asked this one woman who was on the board to get off, and she came with her lawyer. And that was the first meeting I ran, and I was the youngest one there. So I looked at each one, and I, Mary, you know, and stuff. Now you're going to vote this way, and you're going to vote this way, and you're going to vote this way, and we're all going to, and you're going to propose this, and this is how we're going to have this. Because I said, you know, we couldn't have, she was scandalized that she was getting off a board. And she said that will reflect on my professional resume. And I have a lawyer here, and you are not kicking me off. So I made sure she didn't get kicked off. But I said, you have to make sure you don't talk without the board's permission. Ooh, it was an exciting meeting.
Fun way to start.
Yeah. But I had been on the board, you know, for a while and everything else. At that time, if you were president, you did get a reward. And then later on, when my husband was, he never became president, but when he was there, I saw what they were giving as their reward for being president. And this will show you how poor we were. This was my reward for being president.
Oh. That's very cute.
That is cute.
So for the record, that is a bookmark. It's a little owl on top. And it says CMCLA 1983 through 84.
And that was my reward for being president of the library board.
That's great.
it's not even very clean. It's so much fun because I've been on lots of boards since then, and this is the smallest reward I've ever. Yeah. But at that time, I was like, oh, this is fun. This is a bookmark. This is great.
Jeanette, there is a legend at Cedar Mill about you and storytelling and some live kittens. Do you remember?
No, I don't know. I did a lot of stuff with the kitten when I'm pregnant with my second one. I am still storytelling, and they are so worried that I will give birth while I'm storytelling, because I'm out to here and I'm just telling stories. They have a picture of me just being very pregnant. Telling stories that but what about the kittens?
That you have them here inside your apron.
Oh, I did.
And that it was really, really popular.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know what was really popular, and it's so non-PC now, is I came as a witch. And I still believe that. A lot of schools now won't allow you and stuff. But there isn't a culture, because I studied particularly, I did comparative folk literature. And later on, when I became professional, and I would literally take trips around the world. And there is not a single culture in the world that does not have witch stories. And all stories are told for a reason. And you are supposed to be scared of certain things. If you live in the forest, you're supposed to be scared of the bears and the wolves. And if you live in the desert, you might not get water and live with camels. And so they have Judge Edgy's stories, which are, you know, the wise old judge that travels and makes decisions as he goes along in the desert countries. Almost all of them have tales where somebody lives for 100 years or 1,000 years, and sometimes they live under the ocean, and sometimes they live, you know, in a mountain somewhere, and they come out of the mountain, and then we have our Rip Van Winkle stories. There isn't a culture in the world that does not have witch stories. To deny that part, I think, is ridiculous. You know, I just do. And I used to get dressed up as a witch, and I'd have a black tooth, and I still remember doing this. And at that time, my kids were used to me stories, and they'd come with me all wherever I went. But my Benjamin, my youngest, was probably about 4 or 6. And one of his aunts reminded him of this story where I was telling stories, and I put my black tooth in, and I had my broom that I brought with me and stuff. And after the storytelling was all done, I said, well, let's go out to the car. And he says, no, we don't go home in the car. We go home in the broom. And I go, no, we don't. But I had changed, and I was supposed to be able to fly. She says, I still remember him just being totally convinced that you could fly home. And why were we taking the car? But I would get 100 to 200 people. I mean, it's enough that the fire marshal would come check. Wow. When I told stories, I could make kids sometimes jump. You know, it just, you know, if you could start building up a story and using your voice and you dim the lights a little, and they love being scared a little bit. Yeah. So
that's great. Yeah. Knowing that we've got some folks organizing a library out in Aloha.
Yes, you know, as a matter of fact, I was thinking I might donate to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was.
Looking back on what you guys started, do you have any advice for?
Do you know, I was looking at I was looking at the thing. They should get the community involved. I mean, all our volunteers still live within, I would say, a 3-mile radius of this place. Now, it might have been expanded to 5 miles now, but almost all of them live within 3 miles of the school. Now, I happen to be working near there, and so I was thinking that same thing. They just need to start publicizing, particularly in the schools. If they could get the parents that are involved in the schools to also be involved in their library, very good way. The way I saw it is I saw just a little teeny article in the paper saying, we're moving out of our fan, and we will train you to tell stories. We need any kind of volunteers, but we will train you. I thought, okay, I can do that if they'll train me, because I don't want to think about children's stories, you know. And if they could get that, and then, like I said, we started with donations. Why not ask for donations? I have a ton of books. Everybody has a ton of books, you know. And then you start fundraising after that.
Well, that's the extent of our questions. Are there any other things that you want to add?
No.
When you look back on your time?
No. But the only thing I'm sad about is that Mary knows me, you know, and Mary and Ernest, and certain people still know me, but the majority of people would have not a clue who I am. You know, I know both the librarians very well, because I was the one who hired this, you know, John Schweitzer, and we're still friends, and Bob was the one who was at the committee that hired the Peter Leonard, and we're still friends because of that too. And so we've stayed friends all along. But people who like books, you know. And I'm a little sad that when I come in, nobody knows me anymore. Like, oh, really?
I think that's even true for us on staff. We've grown so much that mm-hmm. I don't know all of the volunteers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You see, we used to all know each other, and we could depend on each other. We really, I think, truly trusted each other. And we also knew who we could depend on. Say, you know, like Sue, if she said she'd do something, it got done. If Mary said she'd do something, it got done. If they, you know, I was doing publicity, it got done. Those publicity sheets went out, and we tried to get publicity for the library. I used to have a list of 13 newspapers we would send to. Once a week, I would come up with an article that I sent to each one of them. You know, at that time, and yet to mail it, you know, because of no electronics or anything. Right. And once a week, you try to get more people in, is what you try to do. Yeah.
I think the passion and the commitment that you all had and staying power mm-hmm. is really amazing.
I know, because if you think, Mary's still involved. Mm-hmm. You know, Fran Harkins, I think, still volunteers.
Right.
You know, Mary and Ernest still is here, you know. Mm-hmm. Lopkins still are involved. Yeah. And so I look at some of these people and I go, my goodness, you know, and probably when I retire, I'll start getting involved again. It's just like, you know, they keep asking me and I go, like, not while I'm working. It just gets too much, you know.
Yeah. So. Well, great. We appreciate you coming in and sharing with us.
You're most welcome. And like I said, when you get that far,
I will call you. That was wonderful. Thank you, Jeanette. Mm-hmm.